Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You've just tuned in to our Sunday brunch show. Normally, we're on at 6 p.m. every Sunday, but every third Sunday, we've got our brunch Sunday show at 11 a.m. Our call-in number here is 347-677-0699, and I'm one of your hosts, Rashida De Jesus, and I'm joined by my brother in the martial arts, Master Robert Beal. Sifu Bob, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Weather's beautiful. I'm really excited about today's show. We're off to a great start. I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too. I just want to remind the listeners out there also before we get the news and announcements rolling and our special guest is that we have the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show Facebook page on Facebook. It's a group. And if you have to type it in on your phone or in your browser, it's facebook.com/groups/dynamicdojo. And if for some reason you can't call in or if you can't hit our chat board on the live show link under the show marquee on the Blog Talk Radio page, you can just type in your questions in there. on the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show, so join the group, everybody. If you if you're not on the group, do join because I prefer not to just randomly add people. I like to ask people first or have people volunteer to join. So on the group, if you've got tournaments, events, or whatever that you want us to announce on the show, go ahead and post them there, or better yet, call us. We'd love to hear from you. And here's our number again, 347-677-0699. It's got a ring, nice ring to it. All right. So with that said, I talked about our chat board, right, and the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show page on Facebook. We also have a website, folks, Seika Network. That's S-E-I-K-A Network, .webs.com. You can also be a member there. And you can get email notifications from us for website updates and all that good stuff. So, anyhow, yeah, let's get on with our news and events. I do want to talk a little bit about a recent loss of a martial arts luminary. Just a couple days ago, we've just heard that Guru Lindsay Largosa had passed on to be with the ancestors, and we show him the greatest respect. In fact, it was Sifu Bob that texted me a couple nights ago during class to let me know. I was pretty shocked. Weren't you, Bob?
I was speechless. I was speechless. He was our first guest on our flagship show. Great guy. I was planning on meeting him next time I went to Vegas, and all of a sudden he's gone. It was a big, huge loss.
Yeah.
I mean, what did I text you, Sifu? I'm flipping out, and you were right in the middle of class.
Yeah. I get this text from Sifu Bob, and all it says is I'm effing flipping out right now. And I texted back and I went, uh-oh, well, I'm in class, I'll call you later. And I texted him back with that. But he texted back immediately afterward and said, Guru Lindsay passed away. And I remember getting that text because I was moving around the training floor trying to get a better Wi-Fi connection. And then I stopped right in the middle of the floor. And all the kids were, working out behind me and trying not to bump into me. It was kind of surreal. And I just kind of went, WTF? And didn't I write that in my response
yes,
to WTF? Yeah, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, we had just talked to good old Lindsay just last Sunday. Wonderful conversation, you know, energetic, and then poof, you know, I'm still in shock, you know, I'm still in shock. But, you know, we give his family and his friends our deepest condolences, our deepest respect. And I just want to let everyone that knew good old Lindsay that it was me and Sifu Bob's greatest honor to have him on our flagship first episode of the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. So bless you, good old Lindsay. I think I'm going to get kind of teary-eyed. that's just dust in my eye. All right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's go with that.
We'll go with that. All right. So our condolences to the family of good old Lindsay. We love you. And if there's anything you need, get a hold of us on the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. All right. Let's move on to Facebook announcements. We have a tournament that's actually going, that actually went on yesterday. I think it's going on today. Let me go back. Let's see here. I thought there was something about a tournament on the Dynamic Dojo page. Did you see that, Sifu Bob?
No, I didn't. I posted one last week for Sensei Yamano.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, there was a tournament that I think happened yesterday. That was hosted by Sensei Yamano. Wait, I thought I had it. No, I don't. It was in there. I saw it. I really did. But I'm not quite sure if that tournament is still going on. You know how sometimes tournaments can be 2 days. I don't know if that was a one-day tournament or not, but we do recognize that that tournament. We've also got another little announcement that was posted here by Aaron Richardson. He says, check out our newly updated MMA Fight Council World MMA ratings. And if you want to check out those World MMA Fight Council rankings, you can go to MMAFightCouncil.com. It is the website for your one-stop source for all your MMA needs. It's touted as the best new online mixed martial arts community. So go check that out, MMAFightCouncil.com. Let's see. We've got a shout-out from Maurice Daugherty thanking us for inviting him to our group. Thank you, Mr. Daugherty, for joining. Sifu David Dorian Ross has also notified us that there's an update to new air dates and times for his PBS broadcast of Tai Chi Health and Happiness. Get that new schedule and to get an idea of which PBS stations in your area where Tai Chi Health and Happiness is playing, go to daviddorianross.com. That's David, DORIANROSS.com. Wonderful Tai Chi instructor, has a lot of DVDs out, wonderful programming on PBS. So support local public broadcasting and go check that out. Let's see, I'd also like to give a big shout out to Master Rob Buckland. He shared a wonderful blog with us on the Dynamic Dojo group page called Fearless Fitness Martial Arts. And it's a wonderful motivational blog. You guys have to check it out. It's at fearsltd.blogspot.com. Wonderful motivational blog post. Very beautiful, greatly put together Blogspot site. I wish my Blogspot site could look as cool as Mr. Buckland's. Mine's just orange and normal. This is really nice. Go check that out. That's Fears, LTD at Blogspot.com. Thank you so much, Rob Buckland, for posting your blog on there, and I'm hoping you'll get more readers on your blog with that. And we hope to have Mr. Buckland on our show, hopefully sometime before spring. So for all our guests that have spoke to Sifu Bob about being interested in being a guest, please be patient with us because of our forum / guest format. Every other week we have a guest, and every other week we have a forum. So we'll get to everybody, we promise. Just be very patient with us while we get through all the guests and scheduling and stuff like that. Let's see, what else? Next week's guest, one of next week's guests, Lynn Yancha, who's a licensed massage therapist here in the Seattle, Washington, Renton, Kent area, who's going to be on our show about physical therapies and the athletes next week. I'll get into that later at the end of the show. I'll talk a little bit more about that subject. But she's actually having a celebration, a winter solstice celebration happening at her clinic, Century Massage, from December 17th through December 21st. Now, and if you want if you're in this area, Seattle, Renton, Kent, Auburn, I have to shout out to Century Massage, and I'll be doing more shouting out next week when we do the show with her on it, and Cassandra Ledeen, and another, who is an acupuncturist and an Ayurveda practitioner, Amanda, but I'm going to be doing more shouting out to Century Massage, because she specializes specifically, not specifically, because she does several types of massage, but one of her specialties is sports massage. I mean, for the athlete, for people that are out there being the weekend warriors or are, you know, highly, highly fit people. She specializes in that. And, you know, take it from me, she's my massage therapist. She manages to loosen me up and has managed to get rid of a chronic 3-month migraine. So, but anyhow, her clinic's having a winter solstice celebration December 17th through the 21st. And her hour massage sessions are only going to be $50 if you pay by cash or debit. Now, they start at $75. So if you're in this area, I suggest you check out the celebration. She says that every Friday between 1 and 7 p.m., they hold a student clinic here where massages by the students is only $40 an hour and $60 for 90 minutes. And you can actually schedule online at your convenience. You just got to go to centurymassage.com. And these students are not just, you know, people that come in and go, hey, you know, I want to learn to be a massage therapist. These people are going to accredited massage therapy schools. So anyhow, there's that shout out for that. So let's move away from our Facebook announcements to other local announcements. Remember Sifu Bob last week? I was talking about how I really, really wanted to see that new Filipino martial arts documentary, The Bladed Hand.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I was like asking people right and left, you know, call me, post on my Facebook page to let me know when this is playing. And the very next day, I get an invitation from good old Lou Farrellin, who teaches out here in Washington State, and he sent me an invitation to a special Pacific Northwest screening of The Bladed Hand. So for all of
very
you
cool.
Filipino martial, oh, I know, I'm so excited, I can almost pee myself.
Oh, thanks for that visual, people.
Yeah, TMI. No, anyhow, so for all of you Filipino martial arts practitioners out there or people that are interested in Filipino martial arts, this particular screening is happening here in Seattle at the University of Washington Kane Hall. Starts at 6 p.m. You can actually get your tickets at brownpaperbagtickets.com and look up Bladed Hand. There's also an event page on Facebook. I don't have it up right now, but I guess if you look for Bladed Hand screening, Kane Hall. That's K-A-N-E Hall. You'll be able to find it or search online for it. Now, the neat thing about this screening is that the director, Jay Ignacio, and some of his crew will be flying out specially to be at this Pacific Northwest screening. So it's going to be an exciting show. I'm really looking forward to seeing this documentary for its premiere screening. So yeah, pretty excited about that. In other news, this one's pretty important, actually. A New York City martial arts school, the New York City Sambo, I believe, is holding a blood drive for the New York Blood Center, the NYBC. Now, the New York Blood Center, if I remember correctly, serves over 20 million people in the New York City, what else is in that area, Long Island, the Hudson Valley, and New Jersey. And their supply over the whole Hurricane Sandy tragedy dropped more than 6,000 units. That's a lot of units.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and you think it was bad enough that a couple days without gasoline over there in New York City, imagine a couple days or a week without blood for hospitals. That would suck. So
yeah.
The New York Combat Sambo studio is holding a blood drive to benefit the New York Blood Center. And their blood drive is scheduled for December 27th from 3 to 9 p.m. So just a couple days after Christmas. And you can actually register. So if you guys got like a pen and a piece of paper, do write this down. If you're in the New York, Hudson Valley, Long Island area, you can call them at 917-617-5650, or you can email samboinfo@yahoo.com, sambo info@yahoo.com, samboinfo.com. So if you're on the East Coast over there, New York, Long Island area, and you want to help bring up these units and get it over the 6,000 unit loss, go ahead and call those guys, 917-617-5650, or email samboinfo@yahoo.com. Thank you so much, New York Combat Sambo, for being a great part of your community over there in NYC. Thank you very much, and a shout-out goes to you. All right, I think that's it on my side. So on to you, Sifu Bob. I know you've got some news and shout-outs and stuff like that.
Well, I'm impressed with the way the show is going. Last week we had over 700 listeners, which is amazing for a premiere show.
I just checked the numbers. It's it climbed up to like 760 something, because it was like 700, like 702 or 710 or something like that. Now it's like 768. I'm hoping that you know, by the end of the week we get 1,000 hits. That's my goal. I'd like 1,000 hits. So, you know, check it out. You know,
that would be amazing. And
yeah, especially to give honor to good old Lindsay. He was so kind enough to honor us with kicking off our flagship show and wishing us luck. So, yeah, you know, check out his last interview to give honor to a wonderful man and martial artist and a great warrior. So, yeah, great listening numbers out there. Thank you, listeners. We couldn't do it without you. Keep listening.
Oh, yeah, and we've got over 1,500 members on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I ran across a couple things. It's funny. I was looking up Weird Laws yesterday.
Oh, I love Weird Laws. I love it.
I love Weird Laws. It's just so strange. In the state of California, it's illegal to set a mousetrap without a hunting license. And there's another one. I'll do two for me and two for you. It's illegal for any vehicle without a driver to exceed 60 miles an hour. How strange is that?
God, wait a minute. In the state of Washington,
it's illegal to pretend that your parents are rich.
You know what? Then I've met a lot of kids that broke that law.
Absolutely. Did you know in the state of Washington, it's also illegal to walk around in public with a common cold?
Oh, what? Oh.
Yep.
And I'm this close to breaking the law. Breaking the law.
You've heard about the hostess getting rid of Twinkies, right?
Right.
Master Craig Carter told me yesterday that Twinkies were going to be on eBay. I believed him, but I had to check it out for myself. They're auctioning Twinkies on eBay for like between $15 and $30 a box.
You know, as ridiculous as it sounds, I don't put it past people to, the second that they heard that news, to go out to Costco and buy like, you know, a pallet full of Twinkies and to sell them on eBay because they don't go bad.
No, they've got to have their shelf life for like 12 years.
I know, it's scary. And I don't put it past people doing that. I think it's kind of low, you know, to sell like a box for like, I don't know what, $30 when you can get them for like $5 or something, you know. I think
right.
It's low. But I figure if there's people out there that want to collect, you know, if they want collector's items and stuff, and if they do have that shelf life of 12 years, 20 years, and that's scary because I'm a ding-dong lover and Twinkie lover. And to think that stuff that I ate has a shelf life of 12 years and the chemicals. But anyhow, that's beside the point. But if there are collectors out there that want to, like, buy a Twinkie, go for it. Hey, it looks like we have
exactly.
a caller, but it looks like they're calling from Skype. Because all I get is an area code of, get this, 111-1111. So, caller, 111-1111, you're calling from Skype, and this is you. Welcome to the Dynamic Dojo. What can we do for you?
Hello?
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 Caller 111-1111. That's what we got right here. We've got, I know we've got Master Robert Parham on the line, but he's just holding, and here's another caller. Hello? Say hello if you're not Robert Parham. All right, can you hear us? Can you hear us?
Yes.
Turn the Skype up? All right, if you're the caller that is not Robert Parham, are you listening or do you have a question for us?
I was listening, and I had a question.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, what's the question?
The question is, Master Parham, what I wanted to know was, when did you actually decide to become a martial arts or action film producer? When did you actually decide you wanted to become film producer?
That's a great question. Master Bob, would you be so kind as to introduce our special guest before we get to that question?
Well, today our special guest is Master Robert Parham. I consider him a martial arts brother from another mother, and we've been friends for a couple of years now. We see each other once a year at the Masters Hall of Fame. He was inducted in 07, I was inducted in 08, and we became really involved with the Masters and have been ever since. Master Parham, you're up.
Bob, what happened to your phone?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. So,
Master Parham,
so
are you there? I'm
here.
Okay, good.
Woo! Awesome. So our Skype listener had that question for you. I don't know if you heard the question.
Yes, I did. And
alrighty.
I can answer it briefly. growing up in the era that we all did, and watching martial arts movies, you know, going to the theater, watching it on TV. With the advent of technology, as you got older, I just recently, a couple of years ago, watched a martial arts film that was out on DVD that I spent my hard-earned $15 for. And I don't think it was quite up to par, and I believe that I could do better. So that's what prompted me to start doing that.
Very cool.
Very
awesome.
Nice.
Was there any another question that you wanted to ask, Skype listeners?
Yes, Grandmaster Parham, and when can we expect your next motion picture?
Ooh, good question.
That's a great question. I've got two that I'm working on right now that I really can't speak about because I'm under a confidentiality agreement. They have a huge budget. And we're also in pre-production of a film that I'm writing and co-directing with Anointed Media called Bullets, Blades, and Blood. So that's going to have some great martial artists in it. Tarek Hussein, he's from Egypt, now living in Las Vegas. Excellent martial artist, actually. He got inducted to the Masters Hall of Fame 2 years ago. We have former UFC fighter Shoni Carter. He'll be in it. We have former three-time world boxing champion Tony the Tiger Lopez. So it's going to be a great cast. It's going to be a great film. Looking forward to four cameras to be rolling early next year.
Awesome. Very cool. All right. Thank you for calling, Skype listener. And for all the listeners out there that are calling on Skype, I don't get your information. All I get is a bunch of ones. So so if you do call in on Skype and I call you out by calling you 111, then that's you. All right. Otherwise, if you're calling from, your cell phone or a landline, what I normally do when I answer the calls is I will normally call out the area code. And if there is more than one of the same area code, then I'll also include the last four numbers of your phone number. So because it might be that I might not have a chance to actually get into the screening room to talk to you privately to find out who you are, especially when we have a high-energy conversation. So that's how I'll be answering calls. So in case you call and I call you a number, I'm not being impersonal. Anyhow, again, I'd like to thank Master Parham for joining us today. Thank you for joining us on our Brunch Sunday show, Master Parham.
Glad to be here. Beautiful day.
Awesome.
Great show you guys got.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It's me and Bob's goal to have a great time and bring on really, really good quality guests and have great forums for the show. So speaking of discussions, our call-in number is 347-677-0699. We have Master Robert Parham on the show, a kickboxer and actor with a wonderful career. And I think we're going to go ahead and start asking questions. So if you've got questions for him, call in. Master Parham, why don't we go ahead and start with basically a basic question that probably everyone asks. As you know, a lot of people get started in the martial arts when they're children.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to know, did you start at a very early age? Most kids these days start like when they're like 10. But
I started
when did you
when
start?
Started when I was about 8 or 9.
Very cool.
What prompted me was when I was in grammar school, I got beat up by a girl, and we're good friends now. So if she's listening, and if any of my good friends are listening, her name is Mylene DeJoie. So she beat me up. She hit me in the head with my own lunchbox and everything. And my dad he was very proficient in Tai Chi. So after he finished laughing. He actually took me through the training of Tai Chi and some basic jujitsu and some kung fu. And from there, I studied with my cousin who was into Taekwondo. And that's how it all started. So.
Wow. Just out of curiosity, what style of Tai Chi? Because I'm a Tai Chi player too, and the Tai Chi fighting is effective out there.
Everyone that's listening.
I believe it was Chen style. Oh, well then, you learned to really kick butt, you know, take names later type of style. That is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm a Chen style person also.
Awesome.
Yeah, so in a way, really, Chen style family members, yay. Awesome. Oh, my goodness. Now, how did the kickboxing come into play? Was it because of your experience in taekwondo and tai chi, karate, I was
on the point tournament circuit at the time, and I just wanted to challenge myself a little more than the point tournament circuit. You know, growing up, you look at guys like Troy Dorsey, Bill Wallace, you know, and people of that nature, and I was like, well, I want to try that, but I don't know how. And fortunately for me, I ran into a kickboxing manager. He actually managed one time Guy Mezger and Anthony Macias and Oleg Kitarov. And he became my manager, got me a tune-up fight in my first professional fight. I was like, oh, this is all right. And then in my second professional fight, suddenly learning about the politics of sports, I'm a rated contender in my second pro fight, and I'm fighting for a world title.
Wow.
Is that all there is? That's what it was from the outside, but on the inside, it wasn't easy. You know, in the ring, it's a very different world. I started boxing before I started kickboxing, so I was an amateur boxer. I started boxing, I believe, when I was 12 years old. And it's one thing to have fists coming to you, but you have fists and feet coming to you.
Big difference.
You know? So I had to make it a great adjustment.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. Now, Sifu Bob, are you still there? It's like, I don't seem to hear your phone.
You know I'm a very quiet individual, Sifu.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like normally I can hear each one of the lines through my headset. I can tell, you know, who's on which line and stuff like that. And I'm like, why does it seem like Bob's line dropped out? That's kind of weird. You're wearing one of those noise-canceling headsets like I am?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Now, do you have any questions for Master Parham, Bob? I know you had
a list
somewhere.
Well, how was the transition, Master Parham, between the point tournament, the kickboxing realm, and the boxing? Because, you know, points, you're very controlled, or else you get DQ'd. But in the ring, you try to take each other's heads, clean off their body.
What's
the transition like for you?
The physical transition is, it wasn't that difficult, because basically all the techniques are the same. You just have to learn to let go a little more with your technique. Unless, of course, you know, you're fighting point tournaments in Texas. That's a whole different story, though. I think what in the transition really in point tournaments is kind of like a sprint. You know, you got 2 minutes, in some places 3 minutes to do your thing. You're in and you're out. And in the ring, it's not a sprint. It's more like a long jog. So you have to learn to pace yourself. So that was my most difficult transition. You know, learning to pace. I would watch other fighters and see how they would burn out, and they would be gassed out by the third round and the fourth round. And I think the fear of any fighter, as well as not getting your technique off, is getting tired. Because when you're tired, you're practically defenseless. You know, so that was the biggest challenge for me.
Wow.
Well, what did you enjoy more? Did you enjoy the kickboxing realm, the point circuit, or the boxing realm more?
I enjoyed the kickboxing more, and because I've got these freakishly long legs and long arms and the reach, and a lot of kickboxers you find don't box very well. They may kick very, very well, but they don't punch very well. There's a small number that do. So I had the advantage there, and I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I could kind of, to me, it's a mental game of chess. You know, some people call it, you know, barbaric, and you're hitting this person, but it's a mental game of chess. You just, when you get checkmate, it's just, you just go to sleep.
Now, how was the transition, though, between your kickboxing and your boxing? Did you ever accidentally throw a leg in the ring, or could you mentally separate yourself between the realms?
Well, I could mentally separate myself. You know, it's a sport, and there's certain rules, and when you know the rules, and you're used to rules, and you abide by the rules, it was no problem. I know that, and I fought in the World Tough Man Championships in this inaugural show that came on the FX channel some years ago.
That was like in the late
90s.
Yeah, I remember that.
I fought in the inaugural show, and in preparing for that, I fought some guys who were kickboxers/boxers to spar with, just to keep me sharp. And we got in the ring, and they started kicking. I was like, hey, we're boxing. Oh, yeah, we're boxing. And then they started kicking again. Hey, we're boxing.
Hey.
So it was an easy switch for me, but I see it's difficult for some other people to make those adjustments.
Yeah. Now, you've got a very, very impressive record from what I'm reading on your bio. You and I talked a little bit before the show.
What is that? 17-1.
Yeah, that's a great record. Of course, we all know that records are fudged sometimes. I remember seeing my instructor, Mark Stewart, fight, and I knew his record was like 14-14, but when the announcer announced it, it was like 17 wins, one loss, something like that. But we were talking before the show about this, and I was actually disappointed about this competition you went into, and you won. Was it the pre-Olympic Taekwondo Championship?
Correct. And, here are some...
And I read that as you being slotted for the Olympics, as you and I discussed, but that wasn't the case.
There are some unscrupulous promoters in all sports, but in this particular case, they took advantage that it was an Olympic year and drew many competitors with a quote unquote promise at a slot in the Olympics. So I went on and I found it funny as I'm competing in my weight division. And then we have a grand championship with a person from another weight division. I'm like, they don't do this in the Olympics. They don't have a grand championship in the Olympics. So right about then, I kind of figured something was amiss. But I continued with the competition, and needless to say, didn't go to the Olympics. And that whole thing was a marketing ploy to get competitors. But on another note, I almost did make the Olympic team in boxing. I was in the Air Force. And we fought, and I think I lost in the trials. I think I lost in my second round in the trials or something like that. So I was close.
Wow. Very cool. Now, I can't find it. I know I saw it. But you, in your fighting experience, you fought in, what, four different weight classes?
Actually, I fought in five different weight classes.
Kickboxing,
sort of. Yeah, I started off at 160 pounds.
Oh, yeah,
pounds,
okay. Wow.
Which is middleweight. I went from middleweight up to 175 pounds. So I went from middleweight to light heavyweight. I went back down to super middleweight, which is 168 pounds. Jumped up to 190, which is cruiserweight, and then an over 200, which is heavyweight. So, yeah.
Wow.
How did you do that? Mass Farm, did you just start pumping a lot of iron and start building the mass?
I had a personal trainer who was training me when I went from 160 to, I'm sorry, when I went from 175 to 190, but the rest of the weight fluctuation was my battle with ice cream. I have ice cream.
Well, that'll knock you out right there.
If I don't eat any ice cream and I run and do what I'm supposed to do, I would come in the ring, you know, rather light. And but if I just had had a scoop, and then I would, you know, say, I guess it's time to fight a heavyweight. I can't cut this weight. Goodness gracious.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it looks like we have another caller. We have a caller from area code 404. Area code 404, go ahead. Welcome to the Dynamic Dojo.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Pretty good.
Doing well.
Good. I had a question for Master Parham, but he answered the question. I was going to ask him who was his toughest opponent, but he just let us know it was ice cream.
Ice cream.
yeah, ice cream does it every time.
Yeah, Master Parham, in your martial arts career, who was your toughest opponent?
Okay, so I've got two. The last time I fought professionally, I fought this gentleman. His name is Patrick Barry. Now, I don't know if people follow MMA, but Patrick went on to become a UFC fighter. Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he was tough to me in a sense because I was a little older when I tried to come back. Now, you can't hit the, you know, the curveball barely misses home plate. You know, I was missing punches and kicks by inches, and I kind of realized I shouldn't have been there. And Pat then let me know I shouldn't have been there. So he was tough in that sense because he was a young gun. He was me at his age. But in the point tournament circuit, the toughest opponent I've ever faced was Eric O'Neill, Grandmaster Eric O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
We fought four times. Two of them were close, but I could never. He would always raise the game, always raise the game. Just when I think I got him, he would pull something else out of his hat. I'm like, oh my God, what do I have to do? I need another pair of arms and legs to get this guy. So he was probably
you guys
my
are
toughest
friends.
Opponent. And I fought on a point tournament circuit. I've been on the floor with guys like Mafia Holloway. Oh, gee whiz. Tony Young. I've been in there with some pretty recognizable names in the point tournament circuit, but man, I just could not cope with that speed. It was just different. It was very different.
Wow. Very cool. Do you have another question, area code 404?
No, that was it. And Master Parham, continue to do a wonderful job, and we're proud of you, all your fans. We appreciate everything that you do. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. Take care.
Who is this that was calling, area code 404? Who are we speaking of?
Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson, thank you
Mr.
so
Jackson.
Much.
All right.
Thank
take
you
care.
So much for calling and supporting the show and talking with Mr. Parham. Take care. Feel free to listen to the rest of the show. Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's do this real quick. Let's go ahead and just take a few seconds from a word for a public service announcement, and we'll be back in just 1 minute.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome back, listeners. If you're just now tuning in, you've tuned in to the Dynamic Dojo radio show with Rashida and Robert. Our call-in number is 347-677-0699. And our special guest today is former kickboxer and current actor, Master Robert Parham. Welcome back, everybody. And Sifu Bob, any more questions? I know you had a list, and I'm trying to find mine. I don't know what happened to my notes.
I knew Robert would end up on my list sometime or another. Robert, in your experience, what is the main difference between kickboxing, the way you practiced it and fought with it, and the Muay Thai, other than the use of elbows and knees? Was there a big difference?
There's a big difference. Muay Thai boxers, they stand straight up and down, and they don't use a lot of head movement. They kind of fight like European fighters. They're very erect, and they kind of square off, shoulder square to you, which to me, in my opinion, makes them an easier target. But those guys are tough, man. They're tough.
Mm-hmm.
They are tough. I won a couple rounds with a couple Thai boxers, and they would start kicking me in my legs. I was like, hey, man, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Those guys are tough. You know, and they're you know, you look at them, and, oh, he's smaller than me. He doesn't have that much power. Don't let the size fool you. Don't let the size fool you. Those guys are tough and dangerous.
The way they train is unbelievable. You know, kicking the banana trees, taking six to their chin. When they connect you, they want to break things.
Yeah. They don't hit. There's no setups. There's no technique they use to set you up for the knockout blow. Everything is a knockout blow that they throw. Everything.
Yeah. Incredible. Now, what was your training like in kickboxing? I've had a few students ask me about, you know, MMA or kickboxing or Muay Thai, and being that I don't have experience with kickboxing per se, I've only gone so far as to go to the to semi-contact point sparring, and that was it. Which I find funny why they call it semi-contact, but I still got knocked out. But what? I got my kick in, knocked somebody else out too. But you know, I don't have that experience. And so is, you know, in your kickboxing training, was it a little bit more like boxing training with the road work and the mitts and the bags, or was it a mix between like Muay Thai and boxing? How does that work?
For me, it was exactly like boxing, except, you know, we threw the kicks in there. Like I said earlier, a lot of kickboxers don't have good boxing experience or great boxing technique.
Mm-hmm.
So I would train for kickboxing. I would train as though I was boxing, but keeping in my head that, you know, I have to throw these. I think the minimum at the time was 8 kicks per round, but I would try to throw 20 kicks per round.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep myself in the habit of throwing kicks. So it was just like boxing, all the angles, moving. I find a lot of kickboxers kind of stand square up a little bit more so. So I would adopt almost like a boxing stance, or sometimes like Don Wilson or Bill Wallace would do. They would almost kickbox like they were point fighting. You know, they would shoulder to the side so that they would slim down their target. I worked out with a couple guys. I worked out with this is Jeet Kune Do guy. His name is Brian Smith. And Brian switched me up from right-handed to a southpaw so I could lead with my right leg, which helped tremendously in my kickboxing career. I took some advice from a good friend of mine. He's a taekwondo specialist. His name is Michael Munyon. About how to sink when you're turning your hips, just kind of sink your knees just a little bit when you punch. So, you know, I picked up a lot of experience, a lot of advice from a lot of guys in the martial arts field, and that's what helped my kickboxing tremendously. And actually, I've
Very
got,
cool.
I think, one or two of my fights on YouTube. So if you type in my name, you can see two of my fights.
Sweet.
To my kickboxing.
Very cool.
There's a theory, not a technique.
I'm losing my wording for a second, but a Thai boxer one time told me, Pixie Elmore, years and years ago, the way she goes into a fight is she compares her techniques to asking questions. What are they what are they going to do if I throw my left jab? What are they going to do if I throw my right leg? And then you can change your fight pattern to adapt to that. What do you feel about a theory like that? Is that valid from your experience?
I think it's valid, but more so is when you throw your technique, like let's hypothetically say I'm going to throw this jab to the head. Well, the head is a big place, you know. Where are you going to aim that? Are you going to aim it above the eyebrow, in the corner of the left eye, right up under the nose, on the bridge of the nose? So aiming your technique with precision, I think, is just as important as asking questions. I am one for precision. I consider myself a technician. So precision is very, very important for me. I went to a George Dillman seminar. You know, people say what they say, George Dillman and Jack Hogan, Jack as well. People say what they want to say about, you know, the techniques that knockout punch, knockout touch, this, that, and the other. So I watched George do this liver technique. You know, he hit somebody in the liver and a guy fell. You know, was unconscious. When I was in the ring, when I was fighting for the middleweight title, I was like, let me try this. Let's see if this works. So I threw a front ball kick, a basic front ball kick that you learn as a white belt technique,
to the
area that George did. And boom, the guy's legs just left him. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
This really works.
I got hook punched in a liver once, and that was it. I mean, at first it felt like somebody sucked all the air out of me, and I was fine for a second. And then all of a sudden, like everything started to go white. My legs gave out, and I was on the ground, and it was just like a little tap, but it was spot on. And it was like one of those strikes where it felt like, you know, when you touch something really hot, it feels kind of cold at first, right? That's kind of what it felt like. It was like, boop, I felt the impact. It was like, okay, a little bit cold. And I thought to myself, oh, that was a nice hit. I'm like, wow, you know, it was incredible how that is, you know. And yeah, when, like you said, you know, there are people out there that will go like, oh, you know, George Dillman, I don't know, Dimmock, and all that other kind of stuff.
You got
the skeptics, but, you know, I chalk it up to precision.
Precision
and the being able to hit those pinpoint targets that do have a relationship to our nervous system.
Exactly. Studying biology, I think studying the human body, because when people, you know, they work out and they bulk up and they muscle up and they sit killer and they consider themselves strong, but in studying biology, chemistry, and Tai Chi, you learn how weak the human body really is. You know? So it's not about, you know, you got all these muscles. The bigger the muscles you have, the weaker you really are. People don't realize that.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? Yeah. And, yeah. So, you know, I mean, there will be skeptics out there. And maybe that'll be for another show. What do you think, Bob? You know,
I think so.
To put up
absolutely. I'd love to have somebody like George Dillman on.
Yeah, George Dillman and, you know, anybody else that does, like, Dimmock or... Or anything like that, you know, and call in, you know. I'd love to do a show like that because that's what makes a show fun. Controversy, it'll be great.
Absolutely. Now, Master Parham, because you are such a technician, do you vary your technique to your opponent? Let's say you've got a guy who's moving his head a lot, bobbing and weaving. When you say you're aiming for a certain part of the head, do you adjust that like a quarterback doesn't throw at their player, they throw in front of them to lead them, knowing that he's going to move? Do you adjust your punch accordingly?
Certainly. If I fight a guy, and I fought a guy one time with a lot of head movement, and I was getting a little frustrated that I couldn't pinpoint, so what I started doing two things. One, I started throwing at his neck. So when he would dip, he would catch the punch.
Nice.
And two, I would throw my hooks. I would throw them where I think he would be at, you know, almost leading the receiver. So I would throw a hook maybe four or five inches away from his head because I know he would lean that way and he would catch it. Boom. So, yeah, you have to make those adjustments. You have to, you know, it takes me about a good round, maybe half a round to figure out my opponent's style. You know, I love guys who are aggressive who come to me. You know, that's my forte because they'll eat punches and kicks all day long. But people who want to stand back and play chess, now that's mentally stimulating and mentally challenging for me. That's the kind of fights that I used to love to get into because it would teach me something. You know, you go into this game, a lot of people go into the game for sport and titles and championships, but I want to learn. So if this guy, you know, starts fighting like me, well, how am I going to fight myself? What's the best way to beat me? I fought guys who have almost mimicked my style, almost exactly. So now I got to raise the game another level and figure out, well, gee, what do I have to do to get this guy to get them out of here? So, you know, it's all about the mental
stimulus. In my opinion, fighters are almost like fingerprints. They may have similar styles, but something's going to be different about each one. You can't fight everybody the same way.
Exactly. And I think that's what's missing from some of the fighters today in boxing, whether it's or point tournaments, even some MMA fighters. You know, I've had an opportunity to some of my good friends are, you know, Shoni Carter, Guy Mezger, Anthony Macias, Oleg, all those guys from the early UFC days. You know, I used to roam around with them a lot, and they would teach me things. They were like, you can't do this on this person because this person is different. You have to make this adjustment. You have to make this adjustment here. You have to shift your weight here for this kind of person. And I watch some people today. I go to some tournaments and sit and watch people. Once again, trying to just, you know, rise my knowledge, bring my knowledge up of certain techniques and set me up. And you see the guys and the girls doing trying the same technique on different people, and they kind of wonder why they're not so successful, you know, because it's because they don't make those adjustments. You got to make adjustments
in
technique and martial arts in life. You got to make adjustments.
Right.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about your military background. I know you were in the Air Force, and how your martial arts came into play, or your boxing came into play in the military.
Well, it was I was stationed at Keesler Air Force Base now for 20 years. I stayed in one spot. Unbelievable.
20 years?
Unheard of. 20 years in
when
one
did you
spot.
Well, when did you enlist then? When you were like 10? Because you look like you're 20 now.
See, Bob, that's why I like you. That's why I like you.
Points for Bob there.
Actually, I joined the Air Force pretty shortly after high school. And eventually when I got on the boxing team, one of the coaches was a high-ranking member on the base, high-ranking, I think he was a one- or two-star general, General Neal was his name. And he put what they call a SEI, or Special Identifier, by my name to keep me at the base while he was there, so I couldn't get any orders, so he can keep me under his watchful eye. Well, he eventually got promoted and left, went to the Pentagon, et cetera, and so forth, and nobody ever took the SEI off my name. So I stayed there. But staying there gave me some great experience. I got to, as far as boxing is concerned, I got to meet some of the guys from the Kronk Gym. I fought as an amateur. I've been in the ring with Frank Lyles, who went on as a professional to win the World Middleweight Championship. Roy Jones, who we all know has won multiple championships as a professional. I got to work out with some of the greatest professional fighters in the local area, and meet some of the great professional fighters and have their insight. They give me insight and they give me advice. And it was great. It was great. I wouldn't change it. Not at all. Not 1 minute.
Wow. What was your highest military rank that you received before you retired?
I retired as a tech sergeant. I missed master by like a point. And at the time that I decided to retire, I decided to retire because Hurricane Katrina came through. You know, wiped out everything that my family had. And I thought about staying or reenlisting. And at the time, the base was like, hey, guys, where do you want to go? My wife wanted to come to California. And I was like, okay, I'll go to California too, because she was also in the service. Well, she got orders to come to California, and I didn't. My order said, stay here and help us rebuild this base, because you've been here so long and everybody knows you, et cetera, and so forth. So I looked at my watch and said, wow, it's time for me to retire. I'm out of here, guys. That was it. It was a long and illustrious career. I met some really great people, really, really great people.
Now, tell us about you're doing a fabulous job with the Masters Hall of Fame. What's that like? What are you doing? That magazine is amazing that you came up with and published a couple of my articles, my rants, my raves, me beating the crap out of my son.
One of the duties of the Masters Hall of Fame is to, you know, recognize quality martial artists who have an impact on their community. So that's what we try to do. I'd like to think I do that pretty successfully. I like to think everybody does it successfully. The magazine was a hit. I had to suspend it for a while because I've got so many activities going on now outside of the Hall of Fame with my film career is getting ready to really take off. So I haven't really had time to do the things that I have normally done in the past with the magazine and with the Masters Hall of Fame. So things are just happening, making adjustments, once again, making adjustments in life.
Oh, very good. Oh, by the way, Sifu Reseda was asked by Han Ji Heck to be an ambassador this year to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, well, welcome aboard.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
And she's, you know, we have a conference call next week. She's also slotted to do a possible seminar next year, which will be really cool. Where, you know, she's going to do a Tai Chi seminar, which would be really cool to attend.
Oh, awesome. You know, maybe I can get my dad to come down. My dad, I like to brag on my dad a little bit. He doesn't like a lot of publicity or a lot of the fanfare, but he's been going to the park in New Jersey. That's where I was raised, and doing Tai Chi from now. Let's see, he's been doing it for about 30 years now. So
awesome.
Here's the person who was running the class, so who would start the class, it wasn't even a class per se, but there's about 20 people out there. Her name is Mrs. Liu. She speaks no English, and she's straight from China somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know specifically, but she allowed my dad to stand next to her to lead class, which is one
Very
of the highest
cool.
honors that there is. And Rita, you know about that. So she even lets him lead the class. You know, so a lot
that
of people
is very
are,
cool.
Yeah, he's very, very talented. He's very, very wise, very experienced in martial arts, in Tai Chi. And he comes down here about once a year, and we go to the gym, and he locks me up and twists me up and throws me around.
So getting the lessons from Dad, huh?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I would be honored to meet your dad if he, you know, happens to show up for the Masters Hall of Fame. That would be an honor to meet him. That would be great.
Awesome guy.
Yeah. Speaking of which, remind me, Sifu Bob, to remind me to email Hanchi Dan to see about getting my paperwork. Remind me. I have to do that, I think. So just keep bugging
me. Hopefully he's listening. I have asked the Masters to call in, the ambassadors, the alumni, the executive board. I don't know if they've seen it yet, but I hope we have one or two call in. We know we've got probably a few of them listening because we actually touch probably between us about 15,000 people. So hopefully they'll be calling in. I wanted to ask you, Master Parham, this is not off topic, but because none of us on this line right now have an ego about us.
Right.
In fact, last week we said, if you call in, leave your ego at the door, please. What do you feel about the politics? You and I probably try to stay away from the politics as much as possible. I mean, there's guys out there that are coming up with these organizations to try to discredit what they're calling fake black belts and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's a great question to ask. I personally stay out of the politics because of this, and I'm going to tell you why. In my opinion, martial arts, the martial arts community, is the most disorganized, disenfranchised, non-collaborative community there is on this planet, period. You cannot get three people in a room without egos starting to fly back and forth. This, that, and the other. I'm better than you. Your system. You're a fake black belt. You're a fake red belt. You're a fake grandmaster. And this, that, and the other. You know, and people won't say it out loud, but they'll say it behind your back. So that's not what the values of the martial arts are. That's not what my martial arts instructor taught me. That's not what my mother taught me about how to deal with people. Backbiting and this, that, and the other. So I like to stay as transparent as possible. I like, as corny as it may sound, why can't we all get along? Just you know, let's just all be, like Bruce Lee says, under the stars, under the sky, we're all one family. We just happen to be different. So that's my take on that, you know. People take it to an extreme, but you just walk away and you do. That's what they want to do, then that's what they want to do, you know. As long as I can go to bed at night without any worries, I don't have a problem.
Yep.
Wow, that was very insightful, very, very well said. Because, you know, I've had this one individual flat out publicly attacked me, and I did nothing. You know, and of course, I'm not going to...
Yeah, you don't want to feed the troll, basically. Yeah.
No.
Feeding the troll.
Because if a person has good intentions, or if they have bad intentions, in the end, they're going to have to answer for what they did, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a person is a farce, whatever you do in the dark will come out in the light. So if a person is a farce, so to speak, in the end, its true colors will show. So just live and let be. Live and let be. If, you know, if people want to attack you, people want to attack me. And I've been attacked in the past before. I've been called all kinds of names and... You know, Seth Miller, and, you know, during my competition days, until they get out on the floor and they see it's the truth. They go, oh, okay. There's no ego about it for me. There's no ego about it.
Yeah.
If I shake your hand, we can go get ice cream after the match or whatever. It's okay, man.
I know.
This is what
like I said, your biggest earlier, your biggest competitor was Eric O'Neill.
Yeah.
Well, Grandmaster O'Neill and you are now friends. Good friends.
We've been competitive rivals on the martial arts circuit, you know, for a couple of years, for as long as a career lasts. But he's always been like my big brother. Even though he's had to, you know, beat me in the ring, he would give me advice. He would take me to the side during a competition in which we're fighting in the same division. He would pull me to the side. Hey, little brother, you need to throw your hook kick like this, and then you can get your opponent like this. You should set this up this way and this, that, and the other. And he would tell me that, knowing that we're in the same division. You would think that if he had an ego, that he would want me beat.
Exactly.
You know? But he would take me to the side, hey, do this, do that, do this, you know. And when we fought at the United States Karate Alliance World Championships, we always finished first and second. Always. Every year, for like 8 years in a row. It was incredible.
Wow.
You know?
And Sifu, these are the kind of people that we want on our show, the kind of people like Master Parr and Master O'Neill.
Right.
Master O'Neill is a fabulous human being, not just a martial artist, but he's a fabulous human being.
Yeah.
He's back to the community, just like Master Parham does.
He's
we'd love to have Master O'Neill on the show, and, you know, because, yeah, exactly. Me and Bob want the giving back martial artist, you know, the non-ego, ulterior motive, you know, what's in it for me, your fake black belt this and blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, for anyone to waste energy to publicly, you know, try to discredit somebody else, you know, is, why waste that energy, you know? The way I look at it is, you know, if someone, you know, is going to think something nasty about someone or whatever, then continue trying to improve yourself. rather than like trying to mess somebody else up. Yeah, you know, I mean, like I said, publicly going out and trying to, you know, mess up somebody and, you know, calling him fake or call him out and discredit their name, it's just too much trouble for what it's worth, and makes me wonder where people find that kind of stupid time.
Exactly. Master Parham, what during your years, what's been your most fulfilling memory of the arts, either giving back or receiving from the arts? What do you have as your fondest memory?
My fondest memory of the martial arts is giving my daughter her black belt.
Oh, wow. When was that?
That was in 19, I'm going back now, I think it was 98 or 99.
Wow.
So, the let me tell you the story. It's my first daughter, her name is Latasha, and I would always drag her to class when I was teaching and this, that, and the other. And as a kid, she just wanted to, you know, put the karate uniform on and play around and this, that, and the other. So when I would teach the other students, after about 7 or 8 months, it's like, Daddy, how come I'm not testing? I was like, oh, you know, you're a kid. You don't know this. You're playing around. It's like, Daddy, you should test me. It's like, well, you have to know the kata. You have to know the first two katas in order to test. You know, she's like 5 or 6 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, okay. And she did it. I was like, oh.
Wow.
Whoa. Okay. Oh, serious, aren't you? So she wanted to be a good competitor. Actually, she competed at an event in Texas not long ago, a couple years ago. And some of the people recognized how she fought. One of the judges pulled up to the side and said, hey, you fight just like this guy out of Mississippi. His name is Robert Parham. You know, at the time, my nickname was Too Sweet. She's like, well, that's my dad. So they stopped the tournament. And this is all a videotape. I would never believe this. They stopped the tournament to announce that. I was like, what?
Oh, wow.
Really? She showed me the videotape, and she went on to be to win her division. And then, you know, the young woman's division. Then she fought in the boys' division because she's a fighter. She likes to fight. She loves the competition, you know.
Sweet.
Wow, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah.
Right. Kids are amazing, though, like that, right? Especially at that young of an age. You know, I've got a bunch of kids that it looks like all they're doing is playing around.
Exactly.
You know, it looks, you know, like, you know, focus here, focus here, focus here, Johnny. You know,
exactly.
That kind of thing. And, you know, be quiet. And then come the announcement of test day, they're like, well, am I testing? Well, you got to know this form and that form. And then they'll go out there and pull out a monkey one out of their butt, you know, or concentration one form. And I'm like, what? Okay, well, what are you going to do if I punch you like this? I'm on the ground. I'm like, well, you're five. You know, so the ability for these kids to absorb and learn when we think they're just messing around, that's crazy.
Exactly.
How many kids do you have? You have two, right, or more?
No, I've got a total of four.
Okay.
I've got three daughters. Let's see, 24, 19, and my other daughter just turned 9, and I have a son who's 10.
Wow.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Wow.
Families are great. Are they all martial artists or just your daughter?
No, just my daughter is my oldest daughter is a trained martial arts. I tried to get my other daughter into the martial arts, and that's, you know, I got to show you this videotape. We put her in a tournament because she wanted to do a tournament. She wanted to be like her big sister, and she got hit in the stomach with a sidekick, and she told the guy, don't kick me in my stomach. I was like, okay, she's not going to be a fighter. So
Wow.
She wants to be a model.
And then she's listening. She's probably going, Dad, what are you going to tell that story for?
Now my son, he wants to be a martial artist. You know, we hang around and box. And I got my good friend. He's an actor. I call him my brother. He was in The Matrix, and he's done some other movies. His name is Andre China McCoy. So him and my son, they go at it like every day. They're fighting and tumbling all down the steps, fighting in every room, you know, play fighting. And my son, I've been seeing him doing jump spinning, hook kicks and arm bars and knee locks, and ankle locks. He's going to be something when we get down and get serious with him, you know. So he's one to watch for.
Very cool.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, like Sifu said, these kids just absorb. Maybe he hasn't studied actual martial arts, but he picked up a lot of stuff he can use.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's seen me. I used to give private lessons, so I take him on my trips to do private lessons. And so, you know, you don't pay attention to what your children are doing while you're teaching and this, that, and the other, but they're paying attention to you. You know, so they remember that stuff. They remember. You may not think that they will remember, but they remember that stuff. They remember.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, speaking of movies, what made you get interested in acting?
Several things. One, I had a good friend. He's still a good friend of mine. Sifu John Graham down in Alabama. He's a stunt coordinator. He actually works out, or actually was one of Bill Wallace's students. And so he got me in on a movie set. And I was like, wow, this is cool. But at the time, I was just an extra, so the days are long and the pay is short.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as an extra. And I was like, okay, all right, this is my movie thing. But when I moved to California, saw the opportunity, and then I saw some movies that some people have done, and they just weren't up to par, as far as I'm concerned. And today's movies with the shaky camera and the quick cuts during fight scenes, not a big fan of that either. So well, let me try something. Let me get with some people. Let's collaborate and let's make some films. So we made some shorts. We made this short called Buster Jones, which is out before Black Dynamite. We had this idea way before Black Dynamite. And it's about a aging basketball, minor league basketball star whose cousin gets killed and, you know, Buster's trained in the martial arts. So that trailer is on YouTube, and it went on to the film festival, circulated film festival, and won many, many awards. I was like, this is great. This is awesome. We just need to brush up some things and press on. I got with Gino Kong, who's also a inductee, alumni of the Masters Hall of Fame, and Gino did a movie called Hand to Hand, and I got to act in that. I got to act in another movie called The Karma Killer. And it was, to me, it was about acting, once again, the challenge. I didn't want to be one of those martial artists who, oh, he's a great martial artist, but he really can't act. We know plenty of them. So I did this short that's circulating the film festival circuits right now called Toxin. It's about a guy who's in love with this girl who wants to get back at her former boyfriend. You know, I get to employ some of the martial arts in it. But also I get to act. So I got nominated by the Action on Film Festival as a breakout action star of the year for 2012 for my role.
Wow.
Great honor, you know. I didn't expect that. I threw that through. When I found out, I jumped up and screamed and hollered and said, yeah, so I got the nomination.
That's very cool.
That, yeah, thank you. With that, we've got several scripts on the table. Like I said, I'm involved with two big projects, but I've got a disclosure agreement that I can't really talk about them. But I can talk about another movie that I'm doing called Bullets, Blades, and Blood, which I play a mercenary hired to kidnap a popular R&B singer. And when I deliver my goods, I don't get paid. As a matter of fact, the bad guys.
Oh. That sounds like that would be cool.
Yeah, everything breaks
like
loose on that one.
Right. Now, let's just say, you know, there are martial artists out there listening, and they've thought about getting into movies, the show business. What advice would you give to them? Would you suggest that they actually take formal acting lessons? What would you tell a budding action star?
I would tell them, yes, take some kind of acting lesson. I've been fortunate enough to have two people to kind of coach me through acting. But more importantly, is just do it. If you have a story, write it down, get some resources together, and just do it. You know, a lot of people who a good friend of mine, Tymok, The Last Dragon, a lot of people haven't seen him on the screen since he's done The Last Dragon, and we've had some conversations about independent films, and he started an independent film called I've Seen Things. So he's got a story, just like we have been discussing. He got some resources together, some actors. You know, I've seen his sizzle reel. It's fabulous. I hope that he continues his success in that. But just get your resources together and do it. A lot of people are like, well, we can't make movies because we don't have, you know, $1 million, $3 million, $10 million. But it's a matter of resources. Today, you have a computer, you have a laptop, you've got editing software, you got a camera. All you need is people. Get it done. Just do it and get it done. You know?
Right. Now, wasn't there a movie out there that was actually done on an iPhone? I read something about that. That was all done on an iPhone. It was edited, filmed, and everything on an iPhone. And I was like, that's
been done on an iPhone. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy cool.
That's nuts. There's television shows that have been shot on the Canon 7D, you know, DSLR camera. You know, a camera that's like $1,000. TV shows are shot on that. You know, certain movies have been shot with that camera.
Oh, sounds like something's going on over there.
Now, Chapar, you've done a lot in the movies. You've directed, you've written. What is your favorite part? Do you like the choreographing the fight scenes, directing, writing? What's your favorite part of the motion picture industry?
My favorite part is directing. You know, I like acting. I love acting, but I like directing better because there's nothing, I think, better than seeing your vision come to pass. You have an idea, you write it down, and to see your idea become alive, it's like, wow.
Are you directing everything you're writing?
Am I directing everything I'm writing? Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. Movie that we're doing, Bullets and Blades, I'm having a co-director because I need a second eye on this because I want this to kind of raise the bar of what I've been doing. You know, we're going to raise the bar with, as far as the action is concerned. So I need another eye. I need another guy who's a little bit more experienced in the filmmaking industry. Like we said, no egos. I don't know everything that there is to know. There are people who know, who've been doing this a lot longer than me, and they bring a lot of things to the table. So I'm looking for that experience so that maybe one day I can turn around and help somebody do what they're trying to do. You know, so I just take advice. You know, I take advice. I was speaking with Jim Kelly, and he was telling me about acting. He gave me an exercise on soap. I was like, what does soap have to do with acting? He's like, listen to me. Take some soap next time you're in the shower. You know, you're washing with soap. Think to yourself and talk out loud. How does the soap feel? Try to express that. You know, when I did that, I couldn't express it. I was like, wow, how does it feel?
Yeah.
How does it make you feel? I mean, you can't express that, you know, initially. And then after a while, you can express it. So it's a matter of practice and experience. So that goes a long way. That goes a long way in this business.
Well, do you remember, Matt Farm, do you remember the movie Dragon Bruce Lee, the Bruce Lee story with Jason Scott Lee? Okay. Now, Jared Poteet, he'd come on just after that movie, and I want your opinion on it, is he said they didn't want to teach a martial artist how to act. They found out that it was easier to teach an actor martial arts. What's your opinion?
I agree. I think it's easier to teach on screen now. It's easier to teach an actor how to look devastating on screen. Because it's all make-believe. It's all make-believe. But it's harder to teach a martial artist how to portray his emotions on screen in a big way. I'm going to take Denzel Washington in the Book of Eli. Denzel Washington, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, has no martial arts experience. But in the Book of Eli, he looked like a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
okay.
Wow, this is Denzel Washington. You know, then we take guys like, let's take Chuck Norris. Okay, let's take Chuck Norris's first real starring role in, like, Good Guys Wear Black. Okay? Now, when I was a kid, I enjoyed that film. But when I grew up, I watched it again. The acting was subpar, as far as I'm concerned. You know, so it's easier.
Oh, come on, you can say it. The acting sucked.
It's horrible. So it's easier to teach an actor how to fake it and look like the Bruce Lee dynamo than it is to teach a martial artist how to act. You know, it takes years and years and years to perfect that art, either way it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to teach for the I taught for about 2 or 3 years for the International Stunt School here in Washington, and I found the same thing that, you know, people that just come in with no martial arts experience wanting to be a stunt person, you can give them a choreography and show them, you know, okay, hit here, you know, camera angles and stuff like that. No experience, they look like, you know, best bar fight, like, yeah, like, they look like killers. It was the martial artists that, it was almost as if their skill got in the way,
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Where, well, I have to do it like this because this is how I do it, picture perfect in my art, which is beautiful, but if we're going to be in a bar fight, you know, who the hell's going to care about a picture perfect sidekick, you know?
Exactly. On screen, everything is wider. You know, all your punches have to be wider, your kicks have to be wider. Everything's exaggerated, you know. And martial artists who try to make that transition sometimes have some difficulty in doing that. They really do.
Yeah, I did it first. I must say, my teacher and mentor, Cheryl Johnson, Master Cheryl Johnson, she does a lot of assistant directing now, but she's a stunt person also. She's like, no, don't really hit them. What are you doing? No. So yeah, it took me a little while to put out the, you know, the 50 eyes on my head to look for the camera and, you know, and stuff like that, and to take the angles into consideration, you know, not be stacking, you know.
Right.
It's tough, but it's true, you know. Sometimes with martial artists, you have a hard time to get them into the acting mode and still being able to keep track of, you know, their points and cues and stuff like that. Whereas with the actors with no martial arts experience, their acting is their asset.
Exactly, and if you've got guys like Warnell Stovall and others who, James Liu, and others who do the choreography. I mean, you can take, what's that guy's name from, 30 Rock, that TV series 30 Rock, you guys watch that? No?
No.
Not really.
Not really.
Let's just put it like this. You can take, Barney Fife, and make him look like you know, the last ninja or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, Sifu, this part right here needs to go on our segment. Show your age.
Because we're laughing at Barney Fife, and, like, you know, half of the 20-year-olds out there will have no idea who Barney Fife is.
Hey, I watch reruns. I watch reruns.
Or the Dick Van Dyke Show, Andy Griffith Show.
So what's going on in the future, Matt? What do you think is happening with you in the future? What are your goals to use your martial arts acting? Where do you want to be?
Where do I want to be? That's a great question, Master Deal. That's a great question. I want to be in a position where I can reach back and help other people attain their goals in show business and in martial arts. That's what That's what this avenue that I'm taking is going to lead me to, and that's what I have planned. So, hey, I may not be as big as Disney, but I'll be in a position to help other independent martial artists and actors who want to take the route of entertainment to another level, and I'll be able to help them out.
Oh,
very cool.
You know, my buddy Silky Greg Woldridge, Ahanshi Dan Hecht, and I have had conversations about, you know, there comes a time in your life when you reach a certain age, you've got a certain ability, it's time to give back.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Because when you leave here, when it's your time to, as my dad would say, when it's your time to close your eyes for real, you want to know that you have done everything you can to help the next person out, so that person can help the next person out, et cetera, and so forth. And it perpetuates brotherhood, you know. It perpetuates goodness. And that's what I think is missing, not only from the martial arts today, but I think it's missing from the world today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were in this, I'm better than you, and I have this resource, and you can't have it, so that makes me all powerful, et cetera, and so forth. And nobody wants to share, because when it's time for us to leave this earth, it's all going to be here anyway.
Right.
Can't take it with you.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. Now, for anyone that wants to contact you, if they have any questions about, you know, getting into the acting field or martial arts or what have you, is there a way that they can contact you? Is there a website that people can check out?
I have a website in development, but the easiest way to look me up is to go to Facebook, Robert.Parham on Facebook, and ask me some questions, shoot me an inbox, make a post. I'll be glad to answer you, and if we engage in deep conversation, we can talk on the phone.
Very cool. Awesome. So look him up, everybody. Facebook, Robert Parham. On Facebook. Well, we're getting really close on time. Thank you so much, Master Parham, for joining us today. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh,
it was an honor to have you with us. Bob, do you have any last words or news or anything like that? Or?
Actually, I wanted to bring up something. Do you read the Seattle Times, Cecil?
I do, but not today.
Well,
not
yesterday
lately, not
they had a story that caught my eye because I was looking up weird news to share with everybody in, what was it? Is it Cotton Lake? Washington? Or Cottage Lake? Sheriff's Department, Kings County, was getting calls about a man with a gun waving at motorists. Sheriff show up, guy's developmentally challenged, disabled, and he wouldn't listen to what the sheriffs were saying. So he pulled this thing out of his waistband. The sheriff shot it. They thought it was the way it was a gun. And you know how real toy guns can look?
Oh,
no. It looks pretty real, right?
Right.
Oh, seafood. This wasn't just a toy gun. This was a Lego toy gun.
Are you serious?
It was red, green, blue, white.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I thought that was an interesting story.
Oh, my goodness. Now, they shot him, like, dead, right?
It didn't show if it was fatal or not, but the sheriff was put on administrative leave right away.
Wow, Lego, red, green, blue. Wow.
Yeah.
the guy pulled it out
aggressively. They thought it was a real gun.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, being in a law enforcement type of situation, you know, you've got like a second, if that, to make that decision,
right.
Do I shoot or not, you know, or do I take that extra second to figure out whether or not that's a cap gun or an airsoft gun or a Lego gun, you know,
right.
Protective
well,
vest or
you know,
not.
Going back to it, I want to thank Master Farm for taking my phone call, calling me back, and on such short notice, accepting our invitation, because we're really honored to have you on our show.
Thank you.
The questions were great. The callers were wonderful. And I hope everybody got a lot out of it. We know that you're here for us. If anybody wants to get into films, has an idea, maybe you're around and you can point some rising star in the right direction to fulfill their dreams.
Definitely, I'm going to try to do that. That's my goal.
Awesome.
That's a great goal to have, to give back to the people coming up. And I wish you the best of luck in the future in your films, even though some of them you couldn't name because of the agreement you have. But I hope you do really well in your career.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'll see you guys at the Masters.
Yeah, you betcha.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you betcha. So, Bob, do you have any shout-outs or final words for our listeners before we sign off?
Well, let me think. That's a good question. Now I feel like I'm being interviewed. practice hard. Train your best. Give everything 100%. You can't do any better than that. Give back when you can, even no matter how minor it is. Help somebody across the street. This goes back to the old adage, you know, help an old lady across the street. You know,
mm-hmm.
Pay attention to the elderly, the disabled, even just smiling at somebody. Make their day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Thanksgiving, go down to a mission. Help them serve the less fortunate than yourself.
Indeed. Thanksgiving's coming up pretty soon.
Next week?
Yeah.
Next week.
Like really soon.
And you already mentioned about next week's show, which I'm really excited about. I may be calling in or not because, you know, I've got that parade thing, but all of a sudden we can't get a return phone call about what we're supposed to be doing. So it's like they promised us this, but then they pulled it. So I don't know what's happening next week.
Oh, okay.
Well,
next week, just so our listeners know, it's going to be our first forum discussion show. As you know, we'll be alternating weeks between guests and forum discussion. So next week, our forum discussion is going to be physical therapy and the athlete. And we'll have several guests from massage therapy, acupuncture, Ayurveda, herbs, yoga, that type of thing, that will talk a little bit about the benefits of different types of physical therapies and alternative therapies and how it applies to the athlete, its pros, its cons, the whole nine yards. We also invite anyone from any type of therapeutic field, be it Qigong, Tai Chi, Reiki, different styles of massage therapy, body work, Feldenkrais, what have you, doctors even, physical therapists. We invite you to call in and talk a little bit about your field and how your field would apply to the athlete, and call in even if you disagree with some of those. It is an open forum, and we welcome everybody. We just ask that everyone play nice, or I push the button on you. So tune in next Sunday at 6 for that special forum discussion. Anyone is welcome to call in if you've had a success story with one of these types of therapies, or even if it didn't work for you, call in. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. This is what a forum's all about. So with that said, I want to give out a last shout-out. This shout-out goes to any and all assistant instructors or coaches out there who are a great help to their head instructors in their own studios. You know, as a chief instructor myself, I appreciate all of my assistant instructors, and I know that there are other masters out there with assistant instructors and student coaches and what have you that do appreciate your efforts. We know that some of you may not exactly want to have your own school, but are helping out for the love of the dojo or for the love of the dojang or the kun, and for the love of the art. And for those of you that do want to have your own school, dedicating yourself to the art and helping your instructor and learning how to be a good teacher and a role model under your instructor, We do appreciate you. I do want to put a shout out to my own assistant coaches. I've got Lisa Lavoie, Noelle Zank, who is a student coach, not quite an assistant instructor. I've got Mike Damasco, who's my first assistant coach in Wushu, Susan Rhodes, Nancy Wilson, assistant coaches in Tai Chi. Special shout out to Ethan Savaglio, assistant coach in my Chen style Tai Chi class, who had offered up his home for our Tai Chi classes when we had to move out of our studio. So also Jeffrey Fulmer, one of our oldest students, not oldest as in age, but who's been with us for darn near 20 years. Shout out to Jeffrey for being a great black belt. And shout out to Ken Smith, a great black belt, hard worker. You guys are what make the school. Me and Guto, Cheryl, are so proud to have you on par with us. So I speak for all the head instructors out there that we do appreciate all of you senpais, all of you CSOOKs, all of your assistant coaches. You guys are great. Keep up the great work. So,
thanks.
So if Sifu Bob, if you don't have any other last words, we can just go ahead and call it a day.
Question of the day.
Awesome. And another special thank you to Master Parham for joining us. Master Parham, do you have any last words for our listeners?
I'll just tell everybody to keep their heads up and continue doing what you do.
Right on. All righty. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this special Sunday brunch episode of the Dynamic Dojo. Remember, every third Sunday is our special brunch Sunday at 11. Tune in next Sunday at 6 when we have our special forum discussion of physical and alternative therapies and the athlete. So we'll talk to everybody next week. Have a great week, everyone. See you next time.
You too. Bye-bye.